Benjamin Hall Saved isn't just another war correspondent's memoir. It's a testament to the human spirit's remarkable resilience. This Fox News journalist, who built his career running toward danger rather than away from it, found himself at death's door when Russian bombs struck his vehicle near Kyiv in March 2022. The attack killed his colleagues Pierre Zakrasevsky and Oleksandra Sasha Kuvshinova, while leaving Hall critically wounded, eventually resulting in the amputation of one leg and severe damage to the other. Yet this book has resonated deeply with readers worldwide, including military veterans and trauma survivors who find inspiration in Hall's unflinching honesty about both physical and psychological recovery. Even Prince Harry, who served in Afghanistan, praised the book as a powerful reminder of the human capacity for survival. Beyond a war story, Saved ultimately reveals how tragedy can strip away life's superficialities, leaving only what truly matters: family, purpose, and the profound gift of being alive. Benjamin Hall's path to war reporting began with a simple realization. He felt most alive when running toward danger. In 2007, at just 25 years old, he embarked on his first journey to a conflict zone, northern Iraq. Despite having no journalistic credentials or combat experience, Hall was determined to document the extreme and dangerous. His initial venture, a documentary about Iraqi rappers embracing American culture, proved unsuccessful, but the experience ignited something profound within him. The most transformative moment happened during our plane's terrifying descent into Iraq, Hall writes. I felt more alive than ever before. I was instantly addicted to that feeling of risk. This addiction to risk was shaped by Hall's unique upbringing. His mother, Jenny, who had survived an alcoholic father and her mother's suicide, became an adventurous spirit who took young Benjamin traveling worldwide, living in mud huts in Venezuela, tents in Botswana, and boating down the Nile. Meanwhile, his strict father sent him to boarding school at age 10, where Hall discovered an inner resilience that would later serve him in war zones. After graduating from Duke University in 2004 and a brief stint at Columbia Pictures, Hall realized his calling lay in documenting extreme events in dangerous places. His breakthrough came with an op-ed in the New York Times from Iraq in 2008, which became his entry pass into journalism. In Haiti, after the 2010 earthquake, Hall made a pivotal promise during a voodoo ceremony: "Whatever it takes, I will do." A commitment to reach the very top of his profession. This determination led him to Libya in 2011 during its civil war. After bribing his way across the Egyptian border, Hall reached Benghazi, then secured passage to the besieged city of Misrata on a fishing boat smuggling weapons. There, he witnessed death up close for the first time, a young Libyan rebel bleeding from shrapnel wounds. As the man fought for his life on a makeshift hospital table, Hall faced a moral dilemma. Should he keep filming? He did. It was why he was there. I wasn't driven by noble causes in those early years, Hall admits. I was there for myself. I liked being there. It made me feel alive. Hall's war reporting took him to increasingly dangerous locations: Syria, Somalia, Iraq, Afghanistan, each experience further cementing his identity as someone who thrived in conflict zones. In Syria in 2012, he crossed behind enemy lines with rebels of the 7th Valley Brigade, narrowly escaping Assad's forces who demanded he be handed over. The rebel leader, Abu Ali, refused, declaring, "You are brothers to us. Please go and tell the world what is happening." This mission to tell the world became Hall's professional purpose, though his personal life was changing in ways that would eventually challenge his relationship with risk. In 2013, he reconnected with Alicia, a childhood crush, who approached him one night in London's Notting Hill. Unlike others who asked about what he'd seen, she asked about what he felt, showing concern for the person behind the reporter. Her perspective changed how I experienced and reported wars, Hall writes, making my work more nuanced and vital. Their relationship deepened, and by 2014, when Hall was covering ISIS in Sinjar, Iraq, Alicia was pregnant with their first child. For the first time, Hall hesitated when Kurdish fighters asked if he would follow them toward ISIS positions. Though still dangerously close, just three streets from ISIS fighters, he made an uncharacteristic choice, giving the fighters GoPro cameras instead of going himself. "This was the moment I began to change," Hall acknowledges. After their daughter Honor was born in August 2015, Hall joined Fox News as a London correspondent. Though now a family man with growing responsibilities, he and Alicia would eventually have three daughters, Hall continued reporting from conflict zones, working with exceptional colleagues including Pierre Zakrakowski, a passionate, resourceful Irishman nicknamed MacGyver for his incredible problem-solving abilities. By 2021, seeking more stability for his family, Hall transferred to Washington, D.C. as Fox's State Department correspondent. He was living alone in D.C. while his family remained in London until the school year ended, a temporary arrangement that would be upended when Russia invaded Ukraine in February 2022. When Russia invaded Ukraine on February 24, 2022, Hall faced a wrenching decision: report on what might become the biggest conflict since World War II, or stay home with his family. Fox News asked him to cover the war from Lviv, supposedly safe in western Ukraine. Despite his promise to step back from frontline reporting, the journalist in him couldn't resist. "I called Alicia, who never told me not to go, despite her preference that I stay," Hall replies. "By nightfall, I was on a plane to Ukraine." The scale of the exodus he witnessed was staggering. A 20-mile line of vehicles at border crossings, thousands of cars packed with families, pets, and men saying final goodbyes before returning to fight. About 5 million people fled Ukraine in just the first 7 to 10 days. Fox News established a base in Lviv, but as Russian forces encircled Kyiv, the network decided to send one correspondent to the capital. Hall volunteered despite Alicia's concerns. With Pierre Zakrashevsky, his trusted cameraman friend, he made the normally 7-hour journey that took 20 hours due to dozens of checkpoints. In Kyiv, Hall worked with a small Fox team, including Pierre, cameraman duty, security agents, and their Ukrainian fixer, Sasha Kuvshinova. Broadcasting from their freezing hotel balcony was brutally cold. Between live shots, Hall would dash inside to warm his frozen hands. During breaks, he'd make videos for his daughters, featuring three tiny hedgehog toys he carried beneath his body armor. On March 14th, after anchoring the morning show and grabbing 2 hours of sleep, Hall prepared to report on Kyiv's defensive trenches with Pierre, Sasha, and security man Jock. Ukrainian soldiers offered to take them to a nearby abandoned village that had been destroyed by Russian forces, assuring them the Russians were at least 30 miles away. Pierre, Sasha, and Hall squeezed into the soldier's small red car, leaving Jock behind, and headed toward what they later learned was Horenka. They drove through desolate woods, past damaged buildings and abandoned advertisements. After passing concrete blockades, they reached a devastated village with a bombed church and demolished houses. In the distance, they could hear shelling and see billowing black smoke on the horizon. Working quickly, Pierre filmed as Hall reported on the battle signs surrounding Kyiv. They documented the damaged church with its miraculously untouched statue of Christ, then drove further into the ghost town past a bombed gas station and charred buildings. When a shell landed closer than the others, they ducked for cover, then quickly moved to another location, an abandoned auto shop with bombed-out vans. After interviewing a Ukrainian soldier, they headed back toward Kyiv. Suddenly, they heard the distinctive whirr of a missile overhead, followed by an explosion 30 feet ahead that rocked their car. As Pierre shouted to reverse and get out, a second explosion hit them directly. Everything went black. "In that moment of darkness after the second explosion, I heard my daughter Honor's voice telling me to get out of the car," Hall recalls. "Her voice pulled me back to consciousness." With desperate determination, Hall forced himself out and stumbled down a slope before a third explosion knocked him to the ground. Looking down, he saw his right leg was gone, just flesh and bone hanging by skin with a dangling half foot. His shoes and pants had disintegrated. About 15 feet away lay Pierre, who warned him not to move because of Russian drones. Despite severe injuries, blood pouring from his head and his mangled leg, Hall remained conscious, deleting a photo he'd taken of his injuries so his family would never see it. He dragged himself up the slope toward the road, clawing at the orange dirt inch by inch, determined to get home to his children. When he spotted a car, he frantically waved and threw dirt to get attention. Finally, someone stopped, grabbed him by his jacket, and pulled him into a van. The Ukrainian Special Forces agent, codenamed Song, who rescued Hall, drove toward Kyiv seeking help, eventually finding an ambulance at a checkpoint. Song had also checked on Pierre and found him dead, then examined the smoldering car where he discovered unidentifiable body parts. Back at Fox News headquarters, the network immediately entered emergency posture upon learning of the attack. Pentagon correspondent Jennifer Griffin began coordinating a rescue operation, securing a promise that if Hall could reach the Polish border, the military would transport him to Landstuhl Medical Center in Germany. Griffin contacted Sarah Verado of Save Our Allies, who had extraction specialists near Ukraine. Despite the immense challenges, Hall's critical injuries, hundreds of checkpoints, and an impending curfew, they began planning what seemed an impossible rescue mission. Seaspray, a special operations veteran, immediately began formulating extraction plans, assembling teams, purchasing ambulances, and gathering intelligence. The challenges were enormous. Dozens of checkpoints between Poland and Kyiv, a shoot-on-site curfew, and Hall's critical condition. With all U.S. diplomatic and military personnel evacuated from Ukraine, Hall's extraction options were severely limited. Air transport was ruled out due to Russian surface-to-air weapons, and vehicle transport would take days over rough roads, risking dislodging the lethal shrapnel in his throat. By extraordinary coincidence, they discovered a Polish government train was transporting the Polish Prime Minister into Kyiv for a secret meeting with President Zelensky. This diplomatic Air Force One on rails represented Hall's only viable option, though getting permission required diplomatic approvals that contradicted official U.S. policy. Meanwhile, Hall's wife Alicia received a middle-of-the-night call from Fox News CEO Suzanne Scott. "Benji is fine. He lost a leg. He's in a hospital in Kyiv." After the terror of not knowing if he was alive, Alicia felt immense relief. Losing a leg was something they could handle. She maintained normalcy for their daughters, sending them to school without telling them what had happened. Getting Hall out of the military medical clinical center required considerable persuasion. The Ukrainian doctor was reluctant to release someone in his condition, especially knowing the state of the roads. Seaspray hinted at a way out that would take less than 15 hours with the smoothest ride possible, the possibility of getting him on the Polish Prime Minister's private train. With tentative approval secured, Seaspray began the dangerous journey across Kyiv during a shoot-on-site curfew. The city was under continual aerial attack, with Ukrainian soldiers on high alert for Russian special forces. After navigating multiple tense checkpoints, they finally reached Central Station Kyiv, where the Polish Prime Minister's train awaited. The Prime Minister's train rumbled westward across Ukraine, providing Hall's only reliable link to the outside world, despite the constant threat of attack. As his morphine wore off, he experienced waves of unprecedented pain radiating from his injuries, including the metal rods protruding from his leg stumps. With no painkillers available beyond Tylenol, Hall turned inward, developing a mental discipline to push past the pain by focusing solely on survival, on getting home to Alicia and the girls. Hours into the journey, Hall finally called Alicia. When she heard her ringtone, a delicate crystal sound she'd assigned specifically to him, she answered with shock and relief. "Benji! Oh my God, Benji!" He reassured her repeatedly that he was okay, and she later said how comforting it was to hear that he still sounded like Benji. That call triggered something profound in Hall, a feeling he'd never experienced before. Through all his pain, he felt his world shrink to one single thing, his family. The realization that he would see his wife and daughters again filled him with an intensity of love and wonder that transcended anything he'd known before. Nothing else mattered. As they approached the Polish border, Hall was carried on his bloodied orange blanket to waiting paramedics. They transferred him to a gurney, wrapped him in a thermal blanket, and rushed him to an ambulance headed for an airstrip in Przemysl, Poland. There, a U.S. Army Black Hawk helicopter waited to transport him to Landstuhl Medical Center in Germany. At Landstuhl, doctors assessed Hall's extensive injuries, a depressed skull fracture, detached retina, severely damaged left hand, right leg amputated below the knee, missing calf muscle, serious burns, and a devastated left foot that would likely never function again. While daytime procedures were manageable, nights brought medication-induced hallucinations and dark visions that trapped him in existential terror. After a torturous 24-hour journey aboard a C-17 military transport to San Antonio, Hall arrived at Brooke Army Medical Center, BAMC, where Dr. Joe Alderitt, Chief of Surgical Oncology, welcomed him with reassuring confidence. "We've got you. You are with us now. Let's get to it." At BAMC, Hall's physical therapy with Kelly Brown focused on strengthening whatever muscles could bear pressure. Despite his injuries limiting what they could work on, they focused on lower extremity strengthening, his left-hand fingers, and his good right arm to prevent muscle atrophy. A breakthrough came when Kelly wheeled Hall outside to a balcony after 3 weeks indoors. That breath of fresh air reminded him there was a real world waiting. Soon after, prosthetists brought him a test socket for his right leg, the first step toward walking again. Despite having only 5 inches of tibia remaining, they were determined to try attaching a prosthetic. With Kelly's help and a makeshift boot for his damaged left foot, Hall achieved a milestone, standing upright at a walker and even marching in place. His progress was temporarily halted by septicemia from a fungal infection in his wounds, reminding him he wasn't superhuman after all. Meanwhile in London, Alicia approached, telling their daughters about Hall's injuries brilliantly, first explaining he'd had an accident but was absolutely fine, then gradually introducing the concept of prosthetics by leaving a children's book about robot legs around the house. When she finally told them directly, their main concern was simply what happened to his old leg. Support came from everywhere. President Bush invited Hall to mountain bike at his ranch once recovered. Fox colleagues visited with cards and letters, and therapy dogs provided unique comfort. At Fisher House, Hall bonded with James, a veteran with severe PTSD from retrieving dead soldiers in Afghanistan. James's young daughters, similar ages to Hall's own, eased his fears about how his children would react to his condition by treating him normally, even making him a Lego figure with a pirate peg leg. Despite his foot surgery requiring weeks of wheelchair recovery, Hall convinced Dr. Alderitt to let him start walking just days later, enduring excruciating pain during physical therapy sessions, but hiding it to avoid delaying his progress. 3 days before leaving, his prosthetist replaced his pinlock socket with a vacuum-sealed version, which, after some adjustments, felt perfect, like part of his own leg. After months of recovery, Hall finally returned home to London. The uncertainty of leaving the safety of Fisher House filled him with apprehension. Despite his progress, he worried about being a burden and how his family would react to his injuries. At Farnborough Airport, Alicia was waiting. She ran down the aisle and wrapped Hall in a tight hug, both of them crying and laughing with relief. He had promised her he would make it home, and he did. At home, his daughters waited in yellow floral dresses beneath welcome home balloons. When he knocked on the playroom window, as he always had, Honor and Hero rushed to him with joy. But 5-year-old Iris hung back in the corner. Hall's greatest fear had been that the children would be frightened of him, and seeing Iris's hesitation broke his heart. Then she asked if he had brought Yellow Jumpsuit, the fuzzy-haired hedgehog he'd sent videos of. When he pulled it from his pocket, she approached, took it, and finally leaned against him, saying, "I love you, Daddy." That moment of acceptance meant everything. Most days, Hall feels like the same old Ben, but sometimes he realizes he's someone new. His wounds require new daily rituals, and simple tasks like bathing are challenging. Yet his daughters have been remarkable, even competing to help attach his legs. They've chosen not to shield them from the reality of his injuries, answering their questions honestly without dwelling on the trauma. Despite the difficulties, what happened has been more gift than horror. After 7 years of constant travel, Hall now cherishes simple moments with his family, sitting at the dinner table, giving baths, reading bedtime stories. Nothing brings him more joy. Recently, he lifted Iris despite medical advice against it, leaning against a wall to avoid falling. That moment, holding her as she laid her head on his shoulder, is the gift he's been given. Hall thinks often about the attack and about Pierre and Sasha. He wonders why so much effort went into rescuing him, and Dave, one of his rescuers, explained, "Pierre and Sasha's deaths were tragic, but not meaningless. In a conflict marked by propaganda and lies, they, with you, sought to bring truth to light." The bombing obliterated any distinction between Hall's professional and personal selves, literally taking him apart before doctors reassembled him. The reconstituted Ben is stronger, better, and more joyful than before. He now cherishes simple moments and understands that life and freedom must be protected. Though the pull of journalism remains and Fox News has promised to save a spot for him, Hall's iron will to reach the top of his profession isn't as intense anymore. He's busy with normal things, breakfasts, baths, tantrums, laughter. He made it home. Their lives continue. Everything he needs is here. Benjamin Hall's journey from war correspondent to survivor carries profound lessons about resilience, purpose, and what truly matters in life. His story reveals how tragedy can strip away life's superficialities, leaving only what's essential: family, love, and the gift of being alive. Through his ordeal, Hall discovered that the ambitious drive that once defined his career paled in comparison to simple moments with his children or the quiet understanding shared with his wife. The book serves as a powerful testament to the human spirit's capacity for endurance and adaptation. Hall's recovery wasn't just physical, but existential, forcing him to redefine his identity and purpose. Through countless surgeries, rehabilitation sessions, and moments of deep despair, he had to reconstruct not only his body, but his entire worldview. What emerges is a man who values presence over achievement, connection over career, and gratitude over ambition. His transformation offers a masterclass in finding meaning amid catastrophic loss, showing how trauma can become a catalyst for profound personal growth. Perhaps most poignantly, Hall honors the memory of his fallen colleagues Pierre Zakrashevsky and Oleksandra Sasha Kuvshinova, ensuring their sacrifice isn't forgotten. Pierre, a veteran cameraman known for his fearless dedication to capturing truth, and Sasha, a young Ukrainian journalist whose passion for her country's story burned bright, exemplified the highest ideals of journalism. Their commitment to truth-telling in a war defined by propaganda and disinformation represents journalism at its most vital and dangerous. Hall's detailed accounts of their work and final moments serve as both memorial and inspiration to future generations of journalists. In a world increasingly defined by virtual experiences and digital detachment, Hall's visceral account reminds us of the physical reality of war and its human cost. His descriptions of the Ukrainian conflict, from the frozen trenches of Bakhmut to the devastated streets of Mariupol, bring home the tangible horror of modern warfare. His story stands as both warning and inspiration, a reminder that while darkness exists in our world, so too does remarkable light, often found in the most unexpected places and within ourselves when tested beyond what we thought possible. As Hall himself concludes, "I live in a world where good triumphs over evil." This isn't mere optimism, but a hard-won conviction forged in the crucible of near-death experience, months of recovery, and the unwavering support of family, medical teams, and colleagues. After everything he's endured, that conviction carries extraordinary weight and offers hope to us all. demonstrating that even in our darkest moments, the human spirit's capacity for resilience and renewal remains undiminished.